You are listening to a message from City Church, located in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. For more information on City Church, or for additional resources, including service times, recommended readings, and additional audio, please visit citychurchpa.org.
Anyway, if you've got your Bibles, turn with me to the book of Ruth. We're in chapter 2 today. In chapter 2, that's where we begin. Last week we looked at in chapter 1, the way chapter 1 closes is that we find Naomi, we find her just in what we call ground zero of her life. She is lost. She's lost her husband. She's lost her two sons. And not only that, she lives in a society where it's going to be very hard for a woman to make it on her own. And so she looks at God and she says, God, you did this to me. And this is really just a hard time in her life. And so we begin this in chapter 2. We're following the story of like what's really going on. And in order just for me to set it up, when I was 6 years old, my young brother was like somewhere around 3 years old at that time. I remember a time when we saw all our relatives come to the house. My young brother was very sick. He was very sick, and he had, we just couldn't even understand what it was. His stomach was expanding, and it was as hard as a basketball, and he was just like, we were running him back and forth to the hospital. Things were just going just like, they were messy. And so I remember the day when they had to bring every relative into the house. My grandfather was there, and people were just coming, and they had called them because they thought this was the last day he was going to be on earth. This was going to be the last day. And so they brought everybody. And I remember just like it was hurting to see my young brother go through that. And I remember just like us going to sleep, not knowing what was going to happen. But lo and behold, that morning was very, what was interesting was that we were woken up by my young brother, and he was singing at the top of his lungs, walking around, pushing stuff around and singing. And he was singing, and that was the last time he got sick of that. And this is what we get to actually encounter here in the book of Ruth, where the chapter one ends with Ruth, ends with Naomi just sitting at this ground zero, and it just looks like everything is hopeless. And she's walking in, she's actually what we would say, she is buried under the grief of what's going on. She's come back to their old house, and everywhere she looks around, she can see her husband, she can see her two sons, she can see everything around her is reminding her of what she has lost. No wonder why she thinks God has forgotten her. And so it's so easy for us to kind of just drive by her pain and not really see what's going on. And at some point, she's buried under a depression and anxiety, and things are just not going well. Saint Augustine, in his book Confessions, kind of describes what Naomi's going through around this time. After St. Augustine, the African church father, he loses his friend. He loses his friend, Nebridas. And he says that this friend was so important to him that he described him as half of my soul. And so what he described, he says, my heart was black with grief. Whatever I looked upon had the air of death. My native place, which is my home, was now a prison house, and my home a strange unhappiness, and the things we had done together became sheer torment without him. My eyes were restless, looking for him, but he was not there, and I hated all places because he was not in them. So this is what Naomi is going through. As she comes back to Bethlehem, she says, and she says this at the end of chapter 1, she says, I left full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. I left full. And she says, do not call me pleasant anymore. Call me bitter. Call me bitter, because this is what everywhere where she's looking, she is seeing that. And but as she is feeling this, this is where we get to see the text is actually beginning to change. Beginning to change where you hear Psalm 30, verse 5, which actually says that weeping may endure for a night, but what? Joy comes in the morning. And so this is just a morning where she wakes up and she's still really buried under the grief. But what is about to happen here is that you get to see God now beginning to work. Beginning to work. William Cowper, in one of his hymns, he says, judge not the Lord by feeble sense. When you cannot hear him, but trust for him for his grace, behind a frowning providence, he hides his smile. He hides his smile. So Naomi is looking around, and all she's looking at is that she's seeing God's frown, but like all around him, God is actually beginning to reveal his smile on her. He's beginning to reveal his smile on her. In chapter 1, verse 6, it says that God had visited his people and they had brought grain. He had brought grain. And Naomi says that, I am Mara. And if you've been reading your Bible, you would always remember a place called Mara where God takes his children through the desert. And as they find this place called Mara, that's got bitter water. That's got bitter water. And if it was Naomi, just like as she mentioned that, she would have actually remembered what God did at that point where they had bitter water. This is where God proclaims in Exodus 15, 26. He proclaims, I am the Lord, your healer. And he turns this bitter water into what? Into sweet water. And so as she's saying this, it's almost as if she's making an invitation as well for God to come and actually turn her situation into a situation where it's from bitter to sweet. So you get to see that Mara is actually a landmark. Is a landmark. For her, she's saying, Don't call me Naomi anymore, call me Mara. But what she forgot was that Mara was a landmark of God's unfailing goodness and mercy towards a complaining people, towards a bitter people, as they're walking through the desert. This is what God does. He turns around and he makes this place of just complaining into a place where God's grace is actually defined and it's actually shown. So at the time when Naomi's heart is just black with grief, God's faithfulness shines through. We get to see, and this is what I want to introduce you to, a word called chesed in the Bible. It actually describes God's faithfulness to his people, his covenant loyalty to his people. I call it a grenade word. A word that, like, even in the Old Testament, they're still trying, and it's like every single time they're still trying to actually describe fully what it means, and no one has ever been able to fully describe it. Because what it does is that it describes God's gracious dealings with his people. It describes his love, his kindness, his loyalty, his mercy, and his covenant faithfulness even when people were rebellious. And so we find God pursuing Naomi. And this book begins with Naomi sitting in this grief. But chapter 2 is going to be very helpful to us. It's going to be very helpful to us because it begins with her sitting in this grief in this place where she feels God has abandoned her. But it ends with her actually proclaiming God's faithfulness to her. It ends with her saying in chapter 2, verse 20, may he be blessed, talking about Boaz and also talking about the Lord. May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness, whose chesed has not forsaken the living or the dead. Who's saying, God has been faithful. He's faithful to my husband. He's faithful to me. And this is, and she is now finally, like, you can see God now finally thawing her heart, and you can now see her finally saying, wow, God, all this time you had not left me. I felt like you had left me, but all this time. And so what really the lesson is for us today is just this one. This is where we would learn, and if you can hold on to this, that God's loyalty and that living by faith means that you hang on to this God's chesed, loyalty, and trust Him even when you're looking at life from ground zero. Even when you're sitting there in the pain, you can still be sure of this one thing, that the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. This is what Naomi actually echoes in verse 20. She's actually saying, He never stops showing kindness to me. But all this time I thought He was against me. Now I'm realizing that He is for me. I am realizing that He is for me. And you're going to get to see here as well that God is actually showing this book, the book of Ruth, is about God working behind the scenes. Working behind the scenes. And what you get to see here is the fact that, like, God is working. In fact, this book is going to help you with this. God does His best work when He's silent. God is doing His best work when He's silent in your life. When you feel like you've been abandoned, that's when God is doing His best work. They begin without a king, but they end with a king. God is doing His work, and Naomi doesn't understand. And at this point, God doesn't even explain to Naomi what's going on, because He is actually working behind the scene. And as He's working, and what He does is that He uses His people to actually bring about this aha moment of God has been with me all along. So we're introduced in this book, we're introduced to God's chesed, His loyalty, but then we're introduced to as well what the church is called to, human chesed. We're introduced to God showing this is what it looks like for God's people to live under God's rule. So what you get to see here is that the word chesed as well, because it's just this grenade word and it explodes every direction, it sums up the ideal of just like what the lifestyle of God's people needs to look like. What does it needs to look like? And in fact, this is actually like what he's going to show us like here, what the capturing of God's commandments look like. Loving God with everything that you have, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength, but also it's going to show you also what it looks like to love your neighbor as yourself. To love your neighbor as yourself. And so you get to see this. A theologian, Caroline James, who wrote extensively on Ruth, says this: Hesed is driven not by duty or legal obligation, but this bone deep commitment, a loyal, selfless love that motivates a person to do voluntarily what no one has a right to expect or ask of them. So in order for us to see this, we're going to start actually going into, you see it in Ruth. We're going to look at Ruth. You're going to look at Ruth even some more. Next week as we celebrate Mother's Day, you're going to get to see what the Bible uses as actually a picture of the Proverbs 31 woman in Ruth, who is very selfless. But also the Bible is going to introduce us to this guy here, Boaz, right? They're going to show us what does the gospel lived out look like? What does living under the rule of God, what does it really look like? So Ruth, actually the book of Ruth provides a colorful picture of what chesed looks like on the ground. What it looks like on the ground. And God just shows us. So look at chapter 2, verse 1. I'm going to just really run you through this, and you're going to get to see what does chesed look like. God is a God who has loyal love, and He transforms His people to actually, He transforms His people to become loyal as well to humanity. And He uses us as, this is in fact what the definition of a church is. Showing kindness to strangers, showing kindness to one another, so that we can be a mirror of God's heart to a lost and dying world. so that we can become a mirror of that. This is why God has the church even in the world today. So look at this. Now, Naomi had a relative in verse 1, had a relative of her husband, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. So what's so beautiful about the book of Ruth is God is that it's going to say Boaz is a worthy man. He's a worthy man. He is what in Hebrew you would call Ish Gibor Hayil. But then at the same time, Ruth is an Isha Hayil. A worthy woman and a worthy man, a picture of what the church needs to look like. And what makes him worthy here is that if you're looking at that, it's almost translated as the mighty man of valor. And it's in the time of judges where God is raising up judges, and he's raising up judges. And some of the men, for example, he calls Gideon a mighty man of valor and sends him to war to go fight a war, to fight for the saving of his people. But he gives the same title to Boaz, who's not going to pick a sword, who's not going to pick, but he is going to now fight with kindness. He is going to fight for Naomi and Ruth with kindness, with what he has, right? And so that word mighty man is actually talking of strength and power. It's using, and it's actually talking of the fact that there's three pictures that it gives you: a warrior, somebody who's powerful, right? And it's a military term, but it's also talking about somebody who's able to meet needs. It's also talking about a landowner, somebody who's wealthy. And you will get to see here that the Bible is going to say that a champion is somebody who is actually not only just fighting in a military way, but somebody who's also fighting in actually revealing God's heart to a lost and dying world, especially towards the needy. Can you just see that? That God calls people that are showing kindness to others as warriors. As warriors. So he doesn't have to pick, a sword, but he is a warrior. And there's something that makes him different. God saying he is a worthy man. He's a worthy man, but don't forget the times where he's living. He lives in a time where everybody does as they please. He lives in a time where they don't think they have a king, even though God is king. But what we get to see here, we get to find, it's almost like we stumble on a jewel in the middle of a pigsty. A man who still thinks about, what does it look like for me to live in a crooked world but still live a life that honors God? With all my heart, with all my mind, with all my strength. What does that look like? And this is important for us today. This is important for us today. We get to see this, and it's actually really just like, it's actually put in a very plain way. Look at verse 2. You get to see now Chesed in action. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to a field and glean amongst the ears of grain. Right, there's this law. This is almost like what welfare looks like on these days, right? We looked at it last week where God says that you need to take care of those that are needy and leave some as you reap. And then she says this, but listen to this. And I'm going to go in whose sight I find favor. She's a foreign woman, and she shows up, and she's saying, I'm going to go, and she is risking everything. You're going to get to see this even in the text. She's risking being abused. She's risking being talked down upon. She's a foreigner, and they don't like foreigners in that country, in that time. They don't like foreigners at all. Sounds like some nation, right? But Ruth says, no, Naomi said, and she said, go, my daughter. And if Naomi is a picture of, Job, right? Did I say it right? Job, right? Yeah, him. If Naomi is a picture of Job, Ruth is a picture of Abraham. Female Abraham, who's going to go to a country unknown, trust herself to God. And not only that, she's going to go to a field unknown. And all she's doing is that she is actually being a warrior. Like what other versions, they say she is as a warrior, a helper warrior for Naomi, right? And which is actually like this Ezra, this helper, is actually a picture of the Holy Spirit, this Ezra warrior going into the unknown so that she could actually what? She could bring redemption to Naomi. Said, so she set out in verse 3 and went out and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come. If you want to hear more about this word, listen to last week's sermon. It just says that she chanced this. It seemed as if it was just a coincidence. But this is now where you see God's best work at work. She happened to actually what? Come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the what? The clan of Elimelech. And we see her walking in here. And this is now where we're going to just start seeing. And almost as if it's a coincidence, we're going to start getting to see now Boaz actually now looming large, becoming this warrior for them in this society where you can see his fullness is a counterpart for Naomi's emptiness. Boaz is powerful, and these women are powerless and vulnerable at this time. But God leads them to the right place. He has wealth and resources, but they're battling poverty and hunger, right? And his maleness in this society has automatic advantages, but now their femaleness puts them at risk, but he is able to actually take them in. Take them in. He is becoming a champion of God's chesed to them. Right? Look at chapter 2, verse 4. And behold, all of a sudden, once again, it's actually, if you're reading it in the Hebrew, it's almost like, and it just so happened, she walked into this field, and guess what? And Boaz just came. He doesn't always come to the fields. He lets his workers do, but it's just like at that instant, probably God just say, hey, go check on your workers, and he just walks in, and guess what? Their worlds collide. This is God working behind the scenes. And behold, right? Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, and his first words are so important. This is what means to be a worthy man. And behold, he says, the Lord be with you. Right? And they answered, the Lord bless you. His first words are to acknowledge God and to be that the Lord is actually present with them. He acknowledges that God is actually present with them, and it shows that Ruth didn't just walk into just another field. She walked in a place where God was king, and at that moment, Ruth just became adopted into God's nation. At that moment, she just stumbles into this place, and then he says. The Lord be with you. And he is admitting that all that we have, yes, we've had a time of famine. We've had a time of hunger. And we are harvesting because the Lord is with us. We are doing what we do because the Lord is with us. He is actually acknowledging way more. He's saying, the Lord, and not only that, I want you to get to see, this is a man who is powerful, who's wealthy, but he shows you a picture of what it looks like to be a godly man and also treat your workers with respect. And not only that, he's discipled his workers to see God at work even when everybody's doing as they please. This is, in fact, we could camp right here. Ruth just walks into a sanctuary where she's going to be safe, where they treat work as worship. They recognize the field as a place that God has put them in order to show kindness. And I love this because you're going to get to see his kindness even show up and shine. Look at verse 5. And then Boaz said to this young man who was in charge of the reapers, whose young man is this? What clan does she belong to? Right? He walks into a field, and just as much as he's the boss, he looks around and he notices a stranger. You could be a boss those days, put your nose high, and just totally not see anyone. He has so many servants, but he recognizes her. He notices her. And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather amongst the sheaves after the reapers." And so she came and she has continued from early morning until now. Man, except for a short rest. They're just impressed about how hard she's working, but they know she's not working for herself. She's working on behalf of another. She's showing these days that Hesed showing up on Ruth's behalf, working hard. She left Naomi crippled by grief on a mat, and she said, "Listen, I'm going to come back, right? I'm going to come back for you." I want you to kind of get to see as this thing develops. Boaz has actually discipled his own workers and empowered them with generosity that, listen, when strangers come, you can take care of them also. And he's able to say, "Hey, she walked in here, and then she walked in here, and look at what happens next." Verse 8, then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter." Like, it's very interesting. "Listen, my daughter, do not go and glean in another field or leave this one. Keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on what? On the field. Do not leave, right? That they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young man not to touch you?" That word "touch" is the word "naga." That means to cause harm. They used to abuse women even around those times. Like, especially if it was a foreign lady they used. And he says, don't leave. Don't go anywhere else. This is where you're protected. This is where you're protected. I've commanded everyone. He is powerful, but he is actually fighting. He's being a warrior for what? A stranger's what? Safety. In this place where God is worshipped. And it's pretty interesting. You're going to get to see this in verse 15 and 16, where he says it more than, "No one is going to harm you here. No one is going to harm you here. You are safe here." And this is now where basically, like, and God, as he's showing you a picture of that, he's also, remember, there's three stories going on. It's a story of just normal people on the ground, but it's a story of what Israel needs to look like, and therefore what church needs to be looking like. Is it a place where people are safe? Is it a place where people are welcome and they are safe? Right? Is this a place where we mirror God's heart towards people, where we create an environment where those that are hurting and wounded? And by the way, let's not really forget that as Naomi is working, as Ruth is actually working there, she's also grieving too. She's grieving her husband, her young husband. And she's walking in there, and she's very vulnerable. But Boaz becomes what? A worthy man for her. And this is also a challenge for us as men. Right? We're going to look at Isha Hayil, this woman, next week. But today we're camping in Boaz, who's using his influence to bring protection instead of harming. And sometimes we take our influence way too far, don't we? And we use it to exploit other people, but he's using his influence. What? This is what it looks like. There's a Latin phrase, coram Deo. what it looks like to live under the what? The rule of God. And live as if you're before the face of God. And Boaz is showing this. He's saying, this is what I know. And it's almost as if, I want you to kind of just think about it. And he says, have I not charged the young man not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink. Drink what the young man have drawn. Like what's mine is yours. You can drink our water. You don't have to go somewhere else. Everything. This is a safe place. You can come. You are thirsty and you can drink and be refreshed. And it's almost as if like, and you have to kind of just think about it. It's almost like Boaz has not forgotten. If you read the genealogy in Matthew chapter 2, Boaz has not forgotten this one thing. She is the grandson of Rahab. Rahab was a prostitute living in Jericho. And she was a prostitute. But Rahab believed in God and was brought into God's people. Even though she was a prostitute, we find her in the line of Jesus. And she was welcomed just as she was, but she was not left just as she was. She was welcomed into God's people and she was treated as if she was one of their own. And it's almost as if like here Boaz is not forgetting his own past. Do you know that it is those that have received grace more that extend grace more? Right? It is those that don't forget where God found you. And I love that when I'm reading John Newton, who writes Amazing Grace, and he was once a slaver. He would fill in cargo ships with black bodies and bring them across, and they would die. They would throw them over the sea. But God did something special in his heart, saved him. And this is what it means when he's saying, he saved a wretch like me. And in his office, he would always put something. He would say, never forget that you were once a bondman, and God has shown you amazing grace. Never forget. And this is where it is. When we get negligent with our words, when we get negligent in how we treat people, we have forgotten that we were once wretches, lost sinners, and we were just right there at the bottom, and God came and hung on that cross on our behalf. And that is why sometimes it's so hard for us to extend grace to others. When we forget what he has done for us. When we forget. And Boaz, it's almost as if he hasn't forgotten it all. It's fresh. While everybody would harm a stranger, she says, listen, I know where you're coming from. I know you're coming from Moab, where you're a product of incest. I know you're coming from Moab, where you as Moabite women are known for seducing our people. I know you're coming and you're vulnerable. I know that they're going to abuse you. I know they're going to treat you this way. But no, listen, here you're welcome. Here you're welcome. Why? Because I'm a product of that. I saw my grandmother being treated in a kind way, and therefore I've received what? God's kindness. I'm extending what? God's kindness. God doesn't want us to give what we don't have. He has extended amazing love to us, and he expects us to give that amazing love to a lost and dying world. Right? Not to try to calculate what have they done, where they're coming from, what's going on. Right? Look at verse 10. I love her humility, even in the midst of this. She knows she's going out there, and she's following a law that has been put, a law of gleaning. But she doesn't take that for granted. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you would take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? That you would take, and in fact, that like what, that word foreigner and that word take notice of me, actually they rhyme with each other when you're reading in the language. But really what she's saying is that like, you don't have to, but you're doing it. Like, and not only that, I'm not entitled to this. You're not entitled to do this. Look at the field across. They're doing just as they want, right? But you're doing this for me. And this hesed love notices people notices people the way God notices them and elevates them and puts back dignity in them and treats them like people, not define them by their past, treats them like valuable people, right? Listen to this. But Boaz answered her, "And all that you have done for your mother-in-law since death of your husband," listen to that. I love that because it says, "All that you have done since the death of your husband," not the death of her husband, "you should be mourning too. You should be at ground zero too. But I'm amazed at how you are this Isha Hail, a warrior who's still fighting even when it doesn't look like there's any hope." Right? Isn't it? It says, "But the death of what? Of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father." Listen to this. "How you left your father and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before." Right? And I love this because he looks, and this is what it means to be a worthy man. He looks and he can see where God is also active in other people. And it's very encouraging. He commends Ruth's faith and chesed. He says, look, and he says this, CJ Mahaney in his book on humility, he says this, "Our roles in the Christian community, especially in a Christian community, our role to each other is to identify evidences of grace." Which what? Which means actively looking for the ways God is at work in the lives of other people. Are you constantly the one who's looking at the negative things on the people that are around you? Or are you constantly looking at what? The positive things and the God's grace at work. In fact, if you have not done that, it means that one of the issues that's going on in your heart is that probably maybe you struggle with pride. Right? He says this. He says, you need to become familiar with the fruit of the Spirit and be familiar with the gifts of the Spirit. And not only that, recognize them. Look anywhere where you see these evidences of God's activities and evidences of what? Of God's grace. And what a joy and privilege it is to discern this activity in the lives of those that you care for and you love and draw attention to how God is at work in their lives. In fact, I love in that book because it actually addresses, it says, husband or wife, when's the last time you pointed in the one that you're close to where you see God's grace? If you haven't done it every day or every week, it means that probably you're struggling with pride. You're folded inside. And he's going to say your job as a parent, before you actually bring correction, is going to be complimenting and actually commending where you see them actually show God's grace. And there's sometimes, and it can become a habit where you're like, wow. Do you remember last time we were here? We were arguing. Last time we were here, this was so hard. But I'm amazed at the way you just reacted to me right now. I know that's God's grace at work in your life. And now you can be able to celebrate. And even in Christian community as well. It's always just amazing when you can now walk to each other and say, hey, I'm just amazed at how God is at work in your life. That takes worship to a whole other level. Because we're aware of what God is doing, right? And it's actually interesting because it says, then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly toward your servant. And this is the moment where first time she's actually, her faith has been affirmed. If you look at the verse before that, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you. He prays for her by the Lord of Israel, under whose wings you've what? You've taken refuge. He says, when you made that decision to come with Naomi, you were coming and you were seeking protection under God. And at that moment, what I want you to kind of just think about what's going on. at this moment when he's taking Ruth in, he is actually partnering with God. He's saying, I can see what you did there. You trusted God, and I'm partnering with him to actually what? I'm partnering with God to actually accommodate and make sure that you're protected under the shadow of these wings, like Psalm 91 would say, right? Under the shadow of his wings. And it says that Ruth was comforted by just the way people treated her. She was comforted. I love an author called Chuck DeGroote. He says, most of us are not skilled in the art of leading and broken and wounded souls. People are not problems to be fixed, but image bearers to be known. Not problems to be fixed, but image bearers to be known. Your husband is not a problem to be fixed, but an image bearer to be known. Your child is not a problem to be fixed. Your neighbor is not a problem to be fixed, but an image bearer to be known. And as you get to know deep, as you notice some things in their lives, it's to actually now bring what the gospel there. To meet them where they are. And by God's grace, not leave them there. I just love that because then you see it in verse 14. In verse 14, all of a sudden, this landowner, this mighty man, all of a sudden, this wealthy man becomes a host. He takes Ruth, and it's almost like a picture that you get to see in Psalm 23. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. Where she's surrounded by everybody who would abuse her, that's where he says, come and sit. And it says that she ate, and she was what? Satisfied. Stumbled onto a field, but she now she's taken care of. All of a sudden, he's protecting her, and all of a sudden, she's now provided for, and he is mirroring God's heart, who is saying, I am your husband, Israel. And not only that, in the New Testament, it's going to say in Hebrews, where he says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Right? I will confidently say the Lord is what? My helper. And I just want you to see that. He brings her close. And it's almost as if like this is a hospitality meal where the host becomes where this host becomes a servant and comes and serves her. But not only that, meals in the Old Testament were a covenant as well. And that's why he's acting on the words that he said, don't go to any other field ever. That whole season was actually, she was taken care of. He says, don't go to any other field. Glean from here. I'll take care of you from now onward. It's almost as if it's a covenant meal. Right? And he goes even beyond that. And because it says in verse 15, when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men. Now he is going way above and beyond. He instructed his young men saying, let her glean amongst the sheaves. They didn't do that. This is actually now extra generosity. Let her glean amongst it. Do not reproach her. Right? Don't try to shoo her away, and also put out some of the bundles for her so that and leave for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and she beat out what she gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And it's actually like almost like 30 to 40 pounds of food. 40 pounds of food that was going to be able to feed them for weeks. For weeks and weeks, and she walks in there empty-handed, and she walks out of there what? With her hands full. Right? Weeping endures for a night. But as long as he is our God, joy comes in the morning. Joy comes in the morning. And so she took it up and he goes overboard. And I want you to kind of just keep on ringing in your head. He doesn't have to. But he's doing it. And you're going to see it in chapter 4 where the other redeemer says, I don't want to do it. But he doesn't have to. He just goes and he does it. Right? Now, this is where it kind of closes. Look at the beauty of this text in verse 18. So she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw her, who saw what she had gleaned, and she brought out. Remember, she left it right in grief at the end of chapter 1. Right at the beginning of the day, she's coming back in the evening, and her mother-in-law said, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed is the man who took notice of you." I was concerned that they were going to abuse you out there, but I realized that you walked into God's kindness. So she told her mother-in-law whom she had worked and said, whom she had worked and said, and in the man's name whom I worked today is, and it's pretty interesting when you're reading it. It's almost like she drags it out. The man is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." And there, she's also just like, what's going on is that she's praying a blessing upon Boaz, but she's also she's actually realizing that all this time God has also been at work. And at this moment, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living. Naomi said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, and he is our redeemer." And from there, you get to see she goes back to the field and gleans again. But the story here in chapter 3 kind of leaves us there. That yes, the primary needs had been met, but there's still some more to happen. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with these young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." And so she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. That word, she lived with her mother-in-law, is saying there was still more that needed to happen. And it's preparing us for the next. But what my prayer is for us today, as we look at the book of Ruth, is that number one, we would look at, first of all, and see this worthy man. In Revelation 5, it's gonna say, who is worthy? Who is worthy? And only Jesus is the one who stands up and says, "I am worthy. I am worthy to actually," what? "Open the scrolls and declare," what? "Nations free." I am worthy. This is a picture of his grandson, great-grandson Jesus, who's going to be born in his household. The whole time you're looking at Boaz, it's kind of showing you Jesus, who's going to come in our darkness. Ephesians 2 is going to say, we are dead in sin, in our trespasses. We are walking and we're following the course of this world. We are just in a hopeless situation. But it also goes then and says that, but God, being rich in mercy, because of his great love, this chesed love in which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, he made us alive together with who? With Jesus Christ. By grace you have been saved. So first of all, as you're looking at Boaz, it's pointing straight to Jesus and saying that this is what Jesus has done for us. He has met us in our most hopeless and helpless place. And he has come and he has elevated us. And in fact, Ephesians 2 is going to say we were aliens and we were strangers. But God has brought us what? Near. But it's also going to show you a picture of Ephesians 2 again, where the world has drawn lines of hostility and say that black and white, Hispanic or Chinese or whatever it is, shouldn't mix. Christ comes and shines out so strong and destroys those walls of hostility. And he says that he creates what? One new man, which is now the church. And you see that picture in Boaz. like, I know they say you shouldn't be loved here, but I'm going to erase those lines. Why? Because this is God's heart. This is a picture of the church. But then it's a picture of Christ, a picture of the church, right? The gospel comes and changes us from dead to life. It unites us as one people, but also sends us on a mission to extend the same kindness that we have been received, to start in our homes, to extend grace to each other, to our children, to our workplaces, everywhere, and proclaim that God is King where He has planted.
Thank you for listening to this message from City Church, located in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. For additional information, please visit citychurchpa.org.